Baker is a Jane of all trades. She's the creative director and the color consultant for Pigment, a division of Piedmont Paint and Finish, with a shop in McIntyre Plaza, pigmentcolordesign.com. Christy?
Good evening. It's fun being first. Sometimes our biggest rivals are actually within ourselves. So here I am, 21, and I am standing on the edge of this rocky cliff. And 60 feet below me is nothing but dirt, more rocks and trees, and on as far as you can see. I'm in a part of northeastern Australia where airplanes don't even fly over. And I'm about ready to walk off that edge. There's a nature tragedy for you. And I'm gonna do it on purpose, for fun, and mostly to eat the face off my fear. Because you see, I have a terrible fear of heights. And it started when I was 8 years old. I had the spur of the moment decision to be afraid of heights when I was with my family, my dad, my mom, and a recent college grad who was a family friend and volunteer who worked with the same nonprofit youth organization that he worked for. And we were going to visit the Baltimore Aquarium. I had never been to the Baltimore Aquarium, but I had heard amazing things. And so my little 8-year-old self was just a fit of energy. And as we're walking from the parking structure across the pedestrian bridge to this towering cabinet of wonders, we stop and we are on this little concrete bridge, and for some reason we're looking down at the exotic trucks and large cars instead of the whales and the sharks and all that. I don't know what's going on, and then all of a sudden our friend Dave picks me up by my head, putting firm pressure on either side of my ears, and lifts me up over the railing. And I remember watching my shoelaces dangling in the air, and every time a truck would come underneath me, my shoelaces would go with the suck and pull of the traffic. And then, laughing absurdly, Dave hauls me back over the edge. My mom has actually taken a step back with her mouth slightly open in a complete and utter state of shock. I was their only child, after all. And my dad chuckles along nervously, ever the cool guy, and is like, I guess we should go inside. And I don't know what to do, so I just skip and shuffle and skip and shuffle into what is now a towering mausoleum of who knows what, and I remember nothing from what was inside. But what I came away with, as I said, was this gripping fear of heights, obviously. So I went to the Statue of Liberty with my family a few months later, and I remember crawling up the steps, crying and shaking and determined to get to that crown. And I remember watching Indiana Jones movies, and my palms would start to tingle and sweat, and I would get shaky. I would be in middle school playing video games. Bonk, TurboGrafx-16, anyone? And I remember being like, I am gonna fall off that ledge. I am bonk, I'm gonna fall. And my stomach would start turning into knots. It was horrible, horrible. And so I realized at 12 years old, you know what? I need to face this. I need to master my fear. So I went rock climbing, I went backpacking up in the mountains, I walked close to the edges of things. I climbed trees until the branches would bend and sway in the wind. And so, this brought me a decade later to this edge in Australia. It was part of my outdoor education course, and I was there with half a dozen other students. And we had scrambled up the other side without any ropes or anything, gotten to the top. We'd been navigating through the bush, no map, well, with a map, but no trails, compass, no tents, sleeping out under the stars, leeches, the whole bit. And here we are at the top, and our guide Rob, who said, as only Australians can, nonchalantly and yet implying the very, very real risk and danger at hand, "Who wants to go first?" And I enthusiastically lied and said, "I do." And so 5 minutes later, I had a harness strapped around my nether regions, my own belay rope in my hand, and I walked face first, parallel to the ground, down that cliff. Doo, 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 doo. And I made it, step over step, back to solid ground. I just want to add, the only other person who went face forward puked all over his belayer, and she just had to stand there and take it in the face. So now I'm at a point where I still have a reasonable awareness of my limits when it comes to heights. I'm no longer acrophobic, which is defined as an irrational fear of heights. Yes, I have a reasoned understanding of when, Michael Jackson, you keep that baby on the same side of the railing. Thank you.
Next up we have Miller. Miller, Suzanne, is an excellent housewife. You could eat her handmade pasta noodles off the kitchen floor. She blogs at amenity.com that you should read end to end in one long bacchanalian celebration of blogitude. Miller?
I first went to sleepaway camp the summer after fourth grade when I was 10. It was an all-girls just camp in the mountains of North Carolina. It had like a really cold lake and canoeing and horseback riding and three solid meals a day accompanied by bug juice. My mom went to this camp for many summers growing up. So she was really excited when my sister and I were finally old enough to be sent to this camp to make the kinds of lifelong friendships and happy memories that she had so enjoyed. So before going to this camp, we had a very loose summer schedule that pretty much involved going to the pool from 9 to 5 and getting like a super white, invisible swimsuit on our very tan bodies. And I have to say that driving 8 hours to get up at 6:30 in the morning for a month and be bossed around and sent all over Camp Creation in the heat to learn new things was not a natural sell for me. I arrived a little skeptical. And then my bunkmate was Ann Dinwiddie. Do you guys feel like you're going to puke? Are you having like heart palpitations? Well, maybe your childhood Ann Dinwiddie wasn't named Ann Dinwiddie, but you know Ann Dinwiddie. Ann Dinwiddie was the tallest girl our age, except for me. She had this really blonde, super silky hair, and she listened to music I'd never heard of, and she thought reading was dumb. And Ann Dinwiddie had the most amazing style. Like, she could put together disparate outfit elements, like men's boxer shorts covered in red ants, with like a pink polo shirt, and like a red bandana, and tree torns with little aqua accents. And somehow, on Ann Dinwiddie, that was like the coolest outfit ever. Ann Dinwiddie was never lost for words, and she was never homesick, and she arrived at camp with 5 of her friends from home, so she had built-in acolytes. And she was the meanest person I had ever met. Ann Dinwiddie is the first person who referred to my center-parted hairstyle as a butt part. I'd never heard that expression. And Ann Dinwiddie told me that my color-coordinated outfits from Leggett's were stupid-looking. And Dinwiddie noticed that although my mom wrote me letters every day, she never sent me care packages. And she ate her Jolly Ranchers and Mike and Ike's with all of her friends from home, and she never offered me a single one. And Dinwiddie would tell these really scary stories after lights out that would keep me awake and give me nightmares. But really the worst thing that happened that summer was, I realized in retrospect, I had a mild bladder infection that made getting to the bathroom when I needed to pee very difficult, like in a timely fashion. This was not helped by the fact that I was drinking enough bug juice to drown a swarm of mosquitoes. So I kept kind of shooting these little squirts of pee into my undies. And I only had 9 pairs, and the laundry only went out once a week. So I would stuff the damp undies into this dark corner of shame in my trunk. Now, obviously I should have told someone, or asked to use the washer dryer in the office, or at least rinse them out in the sink. But I was very homesick, and I thought something was seriously wrong with me, and I was 10. So I didn't. I just kept stuffing them into my trunk until I would run out, and then I would recycle them. So Ann Dinwiddie noticed that every time I opened my trunk, it would exhale this waft of stale urine. And in front of our entire cabin, she called me a bedwetter and made a big scene about how awful it was to share a bunk with a bedwetter. And nothing I said to defend myself, and I don't remember saying much, through the hot tears of shame were enough to convince anybody of anything different. So I went from being, you know, just sort of uncool with like off-brand sneakers and butt-parted hair to being actively gross. The 8 hours home from camp were just one long litany of complaints to my mother about Ann Dinwiddie, how she hated me, how I did not know how to do laundry, how all her friends hated me too, how I was super dorky, how I had a peeing disease and was probably gonna die, and on and on. And my mom just very patiently listened while I gnashed my teeth and rent my garments from Leggett's. And then I finally calmed down enough to hear her verdict on the situation, and this is what she said. She said, "Don't let Ann Dinwiddie bother you. She's just jealous." Which just goes to show, she was not listening. Because cool, popular, awesome, cool style, excellent Ann Dinwiddie had nothing to envy in bookish, unpopular, sad sack, pea-stinking Maeve. It might surprise you to hear that I went back to this camp for 4 more summers. I didn't like it, but my mom would be signing my sister up, who loved it, and she would encourage me to try again, and I always would. So back I would go. And then when he came back every summer with those same 5 friends, but luckily we were never in the same cabin again. But she was always just a source of envy and fascination. Like, she was always like winning the canoeing award or like doing a really scandalous talent show act that got her in the cool kind of trouble. And I was still spending a lot of time alone, crying in the bathroom and dodging the cabin squatting counselor with my paperback. So, anyway, finally, eventually I switched over to drama camp, and those were my people. It was good. Yeah, and in high school, summer was actually a really happy time for me, where I felt like I was coming into my own, and I really knew who I was, and I was on my way to even better places. So, happy ending, right? Drama camp, good. Ann Dinwiddie, bad. Lessons learned. Moving on. Except, summer after my freshman year in college, I needed a job, and the girls' camp needed a drama counselor. And I found myself contemplating the beauty of the mountains and the fresh breezes off the lake
and how different a camp job was from a soul-sucking, horrible, boring-ass office job. And I applied. I mean, I was 19. I wasn't 10. I wasn't going to let some mean girl keep me away from this job. And besides, there's no way anybody would even be there, so whatever. So I packed my trunk with my Jolly Ranchers and my ironical boxer shorts. And I drove down 8 hours whistling a happy tune. And I got out of the car, and the first face I saw was Anne fucking Dinwiddie. Anne Dinwiddie also needed a job. Anne Dinwiddie was the canoeing counselor. And Anne Dinwiddie had gotten all five of her friends to get jobs there too. So they were all back there, all those girls who had laughed at me for 5 summers in a row. And you know what? I almost just got back in my car and drove home without a word to anyone. But I didn't. And 3 weeks later, I found myself on the front porch of this cabin eating gluey pasta covered with jarred sauce that we had made for our night out from camp dinner and sharing a six-pack of Budweiser with Anne Dinwiddie. And deep into her third beer, she turned to me and said, "I'd really like to apologize for how mean I was to you when we were kids. Because, you know, you were just so tall and you liked books and you always used words I didn't know and I just felt so ugly and dumb and you had that really long, really pretty hair, you know? And you know, I guess I was just jealous." I could not believe my mother was right about this. So now me and Dinwiddie and I are like Facebook friends, yeah? And we interact all the time, and she's a designer now, which uses her like super cool sense of style. And we both have 9-year-old daughters who are tall and intelligent and athletic and beautiful and everything you could want. And my mom offered to send my daughter to the same sleepaway camp this summer, which I decided she was a little too young, but I'll tell you this, before I sign her up, I'm going to find out whether Anne Dinwiddie's daughter is going.
So, Big Blue Door can be found at bigbluedoor.org. What this is coming here for storytelling. We tried to lure people in by being here listening, but also by trying to solicit you to tell a little story beforehand. So I'm upping the stakes here by showing that anybody gets a sticker who answers a question. So I've got a couple more stickers here. Who has ever been in a car driving somewhere and you're like listening to your music, you're in your climate controlled environment, and then suddenly something happens and the car breaks down and you're stuck somewhere and you have to walk? Has that ever happened to anybody? Not a single person. This is outrageous, isn't it? You get a sticker if you say yes, me. You get a sticker. Okay. Boy, that's really quite disappointing. Okay. Moving on. So, our third storyteller, Diane Bittler. Diane Bittler was born and raised in Manhattan, but left because the rent was too damn high. She loves writing poetry and watching Arnold Schwarzenegger movies. Sarah McLachlan ASPCA commercials always make her cry. And she's a house parent at Innisfree. Diane.
Hello. I'm not an actor, so this is my first time doing this. But, thank you. So, I used to live in Albany, New York because of college. So when I graduated my senior year, I was trying to find a place to live because I needed to go to summer school. And I found this guy and he showed me his house and everything. And the weekend before I was supposed to move in, like literally like 4 days before I was supposed to move out of my dorm into this room, he calls me. He's like, oh, the guy that was supposed to be leaving your room, he can't leave. I hope you don't mind sleeping on the floor. And so he decides to move out. And I was like, I do, and I'm not gonna move in. So I had to go on, Craigslist, which I really hate, but I had to find someone really fast because this guy just seemed sketchy. So I ended up finding these three girls, young, like around their 20, like I was like 21 at that time. So they were like 20, 19. And so I met up with them. They seemed really sweet, really innocent. And I was like, all right. They were like, you can move in right away this weekend. We're looking for somebody because our last roommate tried to pull a gun on us. So we called the police. And now I know why. Because after living with them, I wanted to kill them myself. So I moved in with them. I call them the three bitches because they were crazy bitches, like crazy. So like I moved in. They were so sweet, so nice, and like, I don't know when it started, when the craziness started, but like, I remember Taurus, like, I started having to like hide like food in my room because they would like eat my food. So I had like, I was hoarding like cans of food. And then, like, I also remember toilet paper was a big thing. Like they didn't never want to buy toilet paper. So like I had to like sneak to the bathroom with like toilet paper in my shirt. So they didn't know that I had toilet paper. Because I didn't want them to ask me for toilet paper. And they used to like bum napkins from like Dunkin' Donuts and McDonald's and to use that as like toilet paper. And they were just really nasty. So every time people say, oh, guys are so dirty, I'm like, no. I've lived with girls who are disgusting people. They used to use our house as a brothel. There was like guys in and out of our apartments all the time. One of the girls liked to rock around naked just because like that was her thing. And the other girl had a boyfriend she used to love to fight. And she would always, and then she would invite this other guy over who she was also seeing. And it was like my room was right next to her. So she would like make these awful love making sounds that were like so loud that I would have to like blast whatever I was watching. And I always used to think, I was like, she's not really enjoying herself because the way, like, she just, it was just too much. I was like, really now? So the rivalry started when I stupidly left home for like a week or something. And I had like this old computer, like it used a floppy disk. I mean, that's how old it was. It wasn't even like up to date. It was like an old tower. And I left it in my room because I wasn't using it. And I came home with it, and I came home and I found that it was missing. And I was like, what the hell? I was like, someone stole that old ass computer. I was like, it's not even a laptop. And then I was like asking around, and I was like, oh, I guess I'm gonna have to like lock my door better. And then one of the girls was like, oh no, Kristen took it to her boyfriend's house. And I'm like, what? So I was like, all right, that's weird. But then like, I was like, all right, I'm not gonna say, cause I had asked her before if she had seen it, and she was like, oh no, I haven't seen your computer, da 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 da. Like, she was completely oblivious about it. So then I decided, I went to her job and I was like, look, if you don't give me my computer, there's gonna be problems. So she returned her computer to me like a week later. That was one of the issues I had with them. Other issues was just like, it was just petty shit. It was just, they would, I don't know. It was a horrible experience. And basically one day, I remember, they never paid the rent check. Every time, I found out later when I looked at my statements, every time I wrote them a rent check, I didn't know the landlord's name, so I told them to write it in for me. And this is before I knew they were shady. So I found out that they were writing their names in and cashing the check for themselves and then going shopping with my rent money. And then I didn't know this until we got an eviction letter saying that you have to get the hell out. I was like, okay, so we were getting evicted. They hadn't paid any bills in like 3 months. So we were always like, we were on the brink of like losing like electricity, gas, everything. So I told my guy friends, I was like, oh man, I'm getting evicted. I need a place to live. I can't stand these bitches anymore. And he was like, oh, well, it was a house of six guys. And he was like, oh, well, you can move in with me if you want. It is, you know, six guys, but if you don't mind living with guys, it doesn't matter. I was like, I'll live with anything at this point. Please just get me out of there. So basically, the rivalry was against my sanity. I lived there for like 4 months. Like, don't, like, I learned about Craigslist. Like, don't trust a book by its cover. Like, just because they're girls doesn't mean anything. Like, the guys that I lived with were much cleaner, were much sweeter, much more sane, and that's my moral of the story.
We have Raylan Rashir. I like to pronounce it like that. Raylan is a journalist and news editor for Seville Weekly.
Hi guys. I've never done this before either, so two newbies in a row. My mom told me that she was leaving on a spaceship, if given the chance. She's actually here right now, and I told her I wouldn't point her out, but yeah. Happy Mother's Day, everybody. Public embarrassment is your gift. And so I don't actually remember the context of this story, but the gist, it really could have been anything, because our family was the kind of family that would interrupt dinner to go grab the World Book Encyclopedia to look up the tallest waterfalls in South America, or a chronological list of Thomas Edison's inventions. And we had like every science fiction novel that won the Hugo and Nebula Award since Dune on our bookshelf, so it could have been absolutely anything. But here's how it went. She said, if a silver spaceship lands in the orchard out back tomorrow and some higher being gets out and says, you have to make a split second decision, are you gonna come with us or are you gonna stay? I'm going. I love you. But I'm going, and I will miss you, but I'm out. And I told this anecdote from my childhood a few times in the last month, kind of by way of explanation, and here's why. Earlier this year, there's a company in the Netherlands that announced that it wanted to be the first to colonize Mars. And they were going to send 4 people within 10 years to Mars, one-way trip, and two people every year after for as long as they could manage, and they were going to fund this, raise the money, and also narrow down the pool of crazies who would do this via a reality show. So I signed up. And I know it's nuts, and I know it's probably a scam, and they'll make a whole bunch of money and run, and it costs between $5 and $75 to apply, depending on where you live. And I know it's almost outside the realm of scientific possibility at this point. And I know that it's also kind of gross that you know, we're sort of tainting the idea of interplanetary travel by saying that we're going to have these people compete in some kind of mysterious space X games and like be in a confessional booth saying, like, I am here to make friends on Mars. But there's also something incredible to me about this idea of funding man's greatest feat to date with his stupidest invention ever. So I am going if I can. And I read those terms of service agreements like closely, which I never do, but you know, you should. And it kind of read like a combination of a skydiving liability release form, and like if they actually let people sign up to be tributes in the Hunger Games, something like that. They're basically like, we own you, your lifeblood, your very soul. Nobody you know or who can claim you can ever make money off of what we're doing, and we can totally change the rules anytime we want. And there are all these weird things in Dutch that were like legal waivers that I didn't even know what they were. But I said okay, and I haven't made my video yet. I've signed up, but I haven't made my video, and I've just been watching everybody else's, and they're now up to about 80,000. And I've watched these people who are my rivals in this competition, and I've looked at the numbers, and I've basically been like, all right, like I can deal with this. That the combined population of Charlottesville and Albemarle is larger than that. I think I could be one of these 4. I'm a Renaissance woman. I love everyone. I get along with everybody. I'm a chronicler. I like writing stories. They're going to need somebody to write stuff down, right? Like, this could be me. I could be one of these four out of these four people in 10 years. And to shed the shell of Earth and fly through the vacuum of space and be among the first of my species to step on another planet. Out of all of these people, and these people, let me tell you about these people. They are crazy. To a man and woman, they are nuts. These are like misfit weirdos and strange ghostly Scandinavian women who talk about spirit guides, and I'm like, I can do this. But in addition to watching all these videos, I've also been talking a lot to my friends and my loved ones. And almost to a man, the reaction is sort of the same. There's a range, but this is the typical one, which is that they laugh, and they're like, ha, ha, ha. And then they realize that I'm like not trying to be quirky and cute, and I'm like serious about this. Some of them realize that anyway. And then they're like, oh, you're crazy. Like, you're legitimately insane. And then eventually it gets to, please shut the fuck up about Mars. And so that's got me thinking, right? So how do we define our people? And how do we draw that line between the ones in our camp and the adversaries? And there are a lot of ways you do that. Friendship and love and genetics and shared experience. And a lot of those people for me are here right now. And don't be offended by what I'm about to say next, because I love you. There's another way. And I think it's a way that's been devalued and undervalued by our society. And that's the shared goal. And the people who fix their hopes on the same far star versus the naysayers and the wing clippers. And that's made me realize that all these insane people who have stared into the webcam, you know, and these are the folks who, they stare at their own image. Like when you're skating with someone, you're always doing this, and they look at their own image instead of the webcam, so they're like staring up like this instead of looking in the eyes. These people, these like Trekkie neckbeard weirdos, are my tribe. For better or worse. And if I'm committed to this, which I am, then out of this pool of 80,000 wackos are three other people who I'm gonna hopefully go through some crazy experience that might be televised around the world with, and then I'm gonna fly through the air in zero gravity for 18 months with in a capsule, and then I'm gonna land on Mars with, and then I might die with them.
So all of our first time storytellers get the next level up from the sticker. They get Big Blue Door keychains. So you get the make sure that you eat a lot, drink a lot, tip your white staff very well.
You get another, I'm sore. I spent the whole day doing repairs on a house.